You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 9th of September 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, the news cycle seems to be really slack at the moment. There really isn't much going on that I can comment on. We do have the inquiry into the Manchester bombing that's taking place at the moment. The Islamic extremists that set off a nail bomb that maimed countless numbers of people. The son of a Libyan refugee it was that did this heinous act, who has been sentenced to life in prison. And you look at the bomber himself, and he's obviously a low testosterone individual. He's a complete chinless wonder. And you think that somebody like that can cause so much damage? And his parents were welcomed into the country as refugees from Libya. And that's the way he repays us. He's obviously not a supporter of Gaddafi, because he was an extremist. And it was the extremists that overthrew Gaddafi. And Britain helped these extremists to overthrow Gaddafi. So you would have thought that he would have supported Britain, not wanted to attack Britain after Britain had helped to put the system in place in Libya that he wanted to see in place in Libya. That's just one of the strange things about this. You would not have expected it to have been a Libyan that carried out this attack, but they're having the inquiry at the moment. And a couple of parts of it have been particularly interesting. And I have to give credit to James Dellingpole for pointing out these particular quotes that have come out since this inquiry has begun. This one here is one of the more damning revelations. A witness, Julie Merchant, approached British Transport Police officer Jessica Bulloff around 32 minutes before the deadly bombing in order to point out Salman Abedi. Paul Greeny QC said Miss Merchant cannot recall the details of the conversation with the officer, but that it was to do with praying and political correctness. The officer cannot remember the conversation taking place, the hearing was told. Now, it's important, this bit, because what he did, he got there to the Ariana Grande concert, and he stood around there with his huge rucksack filled up with nail bombs and explosives. And then he stood there in the foyer praying with this huge rucksack bomb with him. And obviously a concerned member of the public seeing that, saw that and decided to try and raise the alarm. And she went to the police and tried to raise the alarm. And just think, the response she got was something to do with political correctness. Police officer probably said something to her like, "Well, he's just a Muslim. We shouldn't think that that is out of the ordinary in any way." She remembers that it was something to do with political correctness. So she was told off for raising the alarm there. So you could say that political correctness is one of the reasons why this bomb was able to go off. I mean, you would think that seeing a Muslim with a huge rucksack would raise alarms anyway to people, because Muslims know that they're going to raise suspicion if they're walking around with huge rucksacks, and they know not to do that. Well, you would imagine, you would expect, but apparently not. Apparently you can walk around carrying what looks like a bomb and The police aren't going to do anything about it when they get told by alarmed members of the public. They're just going to tell the member of the public off for being racist. Paul Greeny, QC, counsel to the inquest, said a witness had spoken to the suspicious person, asking him, "What have you got in your rucksack?" But they received no reply. Mr. Greeny added, "Witness A then said, 'It doesn't look very good, you know, you with a bag in a place like this. What are you doing?' The man replied, 'I'm waiting for somebody, mate. Have you got the time? What time is it?' Witness A then spoke to Mohammed Aga, employed by venue security firm Shosek, but said he was fobbed off." So again, somebody else tried to raise the alarm here, and they went to a Muslim who was part of the security firm. I mean, it must have been pretty brave to do that, because, of course, he knows the Muslim is going to accuse him of being Islamophobic, which is probably what the transport police officer accused the other witness of. That's why she remembers it being something to do with political correctness. So he's pretty... To have a white person point out that something like this is out of the ordinary, is it really must have been out of the ordinary for them to do that. Much as the mainstream media tries to portray us all as a bunch of racists and bigots, we're not. The last thing anybody would want to do is be accused of being Islamophobic when pointing something out like this. Well, Mohammed Aga then spoke to fellow Shosek employee Kyle Lawler about the suspicious man and what they should do, the inquiry heard. Mr. Lawler is then said to have tried to radio his security control but could not get through. He then spotted the man get up and start walking towards the arena entrance, and of course leaving the rather obvious rucksack bomb there as he left. His statement continued, "I just froze and did not get anything out on the radio. I knew at that point that it was too late." Mr. Greeny QC said the accounts of Shosek employees differ about what happened, with gaps and discrepancies between their accounts and the CCTV evidence captured at the arena. But it does look as if this could have been averted if it wasn't for political correctness. Of course, it could have been averted if we didn't have such a ridiculous immigration policy in the first place. If we had ethnically homogenous nations, we would have no terrorism within our nations. Sadiq Khan thinks it's just part and parcel of living in a big city now, is that you're going to get terrorism of one kind or another. But you wouldn't have that if you didn't have diversity. The more Muslims you have in a country, the more chances there are that you are going to get Islamic terrorism. And much as they will now try and draw an equivalent and say, well, the fastest growing threat is white nationalist terrorism or far-right terrorism, if you didn't have the Muslims in the country anyway, then what possible justification could there be for far-right terrorism? The far-right terrorism that we have seen has been aimed at members of other ethnic minorities. So if they weren't there, you wouldn't have the Islamic terrorism and you wouldn't have the far-right terrorism. And I'm not trying to justify far-right terrorism here in any way, shape or form. I utterly, utterly condemn it. It does no good whatsoever for our cause, besides the physical damage and hurt that it causes. But the fact remains, neither type of terrorism would be possible to happen if the country was homogenous. They don't have Islamic terrorism in Japan, where they have all Japanese people. I don't think they have Islamic terrorism in Iceland, where they have a majority white country still. And of course, they don't have any in Belarus either, which is 99% white. And of course, we'll keep a close eye on what comes out of this inquiry, see if there's anything else that comes out which shows that this could have been avoided if we had not been so politically correct. But staying in Manchester, we discover that Manchester is working with artists to improve LGBT visibility in elderly people's homes to encourage residents to come out as homosexual or transgender. Have you ever heard anything so ridiculous? You've got people in these old people's homes who are mainly over the age of 80. A lot of them have got dementia, not even really capable of sex, I don't think, at the age of 80, unless they've taken some kind of hormone replacement therapy. I mean, male or female, probably not really capable of it. It's probably the last thing on their minds. And yet they're going to try and encourage these poor elderly people who also were brought up in a time when homosexuality was illegal and very much frowned upon. They're now going to force them to see LGBT visibility. They're going to force them to see this stuff that most of their lives they found absolutely abhorrent and were taught was a very, very wrong way to behave. Very unfortunate that some people end up like this, usually through being abused. It's very unfortunate. The whole life cycle of the homosexual is extremely unfortunate. I don't think anybody asks to be a homosexual. You should have compassion for them. But at the same time, it should not be promoted. And elderly people should not be forced to acknowledge this sort of stuff. They should not be having it flaunted in front of them. It's like these homosexual pride parades that they force upon everybody to see. They try and encourage children to go to them now. The whole idea of the pride parade was to be as over the top homosexually as possible, be as lewd and as rude as possible, so that when people saw homosexuals not engaging in such overt homosexual acts, people would be more inclined to accept them. So after they've seen half naked homosexuals simulating having gay sex on a float in a carnival, they will be less likely to get angry when they just see two homosexuals pecking one another on the cheek. That was the logic behind the idea of gay pride. And of course, what it does is it rubs people up the wrong way, doesn't it? It's to be forced to see something you really don't want to see, that all your life you've known was wrong, and all your life, or the majority of your life, has actually been illegal. That's horrible. It's like torturing these elderly people to be forcing them to see this. They're not thinking about the elderly people here at all. The Back in the Closet project, set to run through September, we'll see five so-called artists paired with five older persons' housing schemes in the Manchester area to make retirement homes more inclusive, the LGBT Foundation reports. It's not. It's excluding the wishes and the feelings of the majority of the people in their care home. It says here, while less than 1% of over 65s in Britain identify as LGBT, so less than 1% of them, they're going to alienate 99% of the people in these care homes to please the 1% of the people that are in there. I would challenge this idea that it's 1%. I mean, it's 1% to 2% of the public, the general public, or it used to be before they started promoting it. It used to be just 1% to 2% of the general public, and now the other 98% of the general public have got to put up with this stuff. It's got to be forced upon them. It's got to be forced down their throats, as they say. The scheme, a partnership between Greater Manchester Combined Authority, House Proud NW, and Pride in Ageing at LGBT Foundation, is designed to encourage more elderly people to disclose their sexual orientation or gender identity, according to one councillor. At that age, it's going to be more likely to encourage people that are actually homosexual to adamantly confirm that they're not homosexual, I would have thought, when the people in the old people's home are saying, what the hell is this? This is really disgusting. That's hardly likely to encourage somebody there to say, well, I'm one of these people. I have homosexual sex. The idea of them having homosexual sex at the age of 70 in an old people's home, I don't know how it works there. I should imagine they don't encourage partnering up between these old people if they're all living in a home. And as I say, a large portion of them actually have dementia. There's a lot of abuse that goes on in these old people's homes. I just think this is shocking to force this on these elderly people. I mean, it's one thing young people today who don't know what the world used to be like, and they are born into this world, and they see this at school, and they're used to seeing this stuff everywhere. But it's entirely another thing to force it into these people's homes. Because don't forget, these old people that are in that care home, it may be a shared home, but it is effectively their home. It's basically forcing homosexuality into somebody's most private place, in their home, in their dwelling, and claiming that they're doing this for the benefit of the old people. It's not to the benefit of the old people. I feel really sorry for them. And this isn't to be anti-homosexual at all. I'm just pointing out that they are not thinking about the old people here. They're just thinking about forcing their agenda on everyone and making certain that it's everywhere you look, even in the old people's homes, as much as it is also in the children's schools now. Greater Manchester's lead for Age Friendly and Equalities, Councillor Brenda Warrington, said all older LGBT people have a right to dignified and inclusive housing, and this project will allow us to look at how schemes can ensure they provide this for their residents. Again, what about the non-LGBT people? Don't they have a right to dignity? Don't they have a right not to be forced to confront gay sex every time they walk out of their bedroom onto the landing and see posters promoting this stuff? What do they mean by improving the LGBT visibility? Are they going to bring drag queens in to entertain the old folks? A survey in 2014 reported that two-thirds of care home staff said there was not a single resident who was openly lesbian, gay, bisexual or trans where they worked. So it's not like there are even any gays in these care homes, and they just want to force them to acknowledge this stuff. Why is it that homosexuals feel that they need to force their way of life on everybody else? Why can't they just be happy that they're allowed to live their way of life, how they choose to live it, even though it affects the rest of us? Why do they have to force it on everybody else? And in particular, why do they have to force it on these poor, innocent old people? We know this cannot be true, the councillor says, and points to the fact that many older LGBT people feel uncomfortable and unable to disclose their sexual orientation or gender identity. How does she know that? How does she know that old people are not saying they are not homosexual because they're not homosexual? How does she know that old people that aren't really capable of having sex anymore anyway are really wanting to be loud and proud and be having gay sex? Heterosexual sex doesn't really occur very much at that age, let alone gay sex. An artist taking part in the project, Jez Doolan, added, "My practice as an artist is focused around queerness, identity and history, often through telling stories. The Back in the Closet project has a real resonance with my ongoing work, and I'm really excited about the opportunity of sharing my practice with older LGBTQIA+ people living in residential settings." I wonder what all the rest of those letters are that are in that. And I imagine that just that it is somebody that's actually going in to visit these old people, they might be pleased about that. But then they're going to be really shocked when they realise what the reason is for why this person has visited their home. He continues, "As an older artist, I'm looking forward to collaborating with communities of people and sharing our stories and shared histories and looking at how we can make often unheard voices heard and appreciated." But the history that these old people remember is of homosexuality being illegal. The history they remember of it is being warned about it at school, about being warned against older men offering them sweets or trying to make friends with them. That's what they remember. And to think that they're going to have this forced on them in their homes now, where they've got nowhere to run away to, they've got nowhere that they can actually get away from this. I mean, that's the really awful thing about this, is that they've got a captive audience there, so they're going to force this upon this captive audience. Why can't gays just be happy being gay? Why have they got to force it on everybody else? Final news story that I've got today. Again, it comes from Britain. Over 50,000 potential recruits to Her Majesty's Armed Services have withdrawn their applications in just the first half of this year after military brass ordered recruiters to target snowflakes, binge gamers, and me millennials. What a surprise. When you associate these things with the army, nobody wants to join the army. It's had the complete opposite effect that they were hoping to with this advertising idea that they had. From January to June, 30,000 army applicants withdrew from the application process, as well as 13,000 potential seamen and 8,000 would-be airmen, with dropouts rising 18% on last year. So you would imagine that they would think, well, hang on a minute, our advertising campaign isn't actually working. But this is the second advertising campaign that they've done like this. And these people that are not wanting to join the army, this keeps increasing every year, or decreasing rather. A source told The Sun on Sunday, "These kids are full of bravado, but they get cold feet when reality bites and they realise what it really means to serve Queen and country. It only takes a few clicks to apply online, and there are loads of reasons why they change their minds. Sometimes they sign up drunk and withdraw when they sober up. Sometimes they tell their parents who talk them out of it. Others worry about not being fit enough." Well, I would have thought that they don't want to be called snowflakes for joining. The whole point of joining the army is to be a hard man, so that you'll be known as a man with self-discipline that can defend his country. You don't want to be known as a snowflake, do you? Or a me millennial, which is what they have associated it with now. Or crybabies, that was what they were advertising for in the first advertising campaign. The Ministry of Defence told the tabloid, which first reported the figures, that the fall was broadly in line with a rise in the number of applications. In January 2019, the British Armed Forces broke with the convention of aiming to recruit those candidates who are naturally drawn to the military by trying to attract snowflakes, self-obsessed millennials, and those addicted to gaming and their mobile phones. That year, the army was facing a ninth straight year of falling recruitment figures. So the more politically correct they get, the more the recruitment figures drop, and the more they keep pushing this political correctness, regardless of the fact that it's obviously not working. In 2018, the army launched a campaign to increase diversity among their ranks, appealing to Muslims, homosexuals, and emotionally sensitive people in an ad campaign called "This Is Belonging." Top brass reportedly threatened soldiers with disciplinary action if they mocked the ads. So this shows you that these adverts are promoting an entirely different idea to what the army is actually like. Is that a good idea? So that when people then join, they just want to leave straight away, and you waste all that money on training them up, and they just want to leave straight away? I mean, this is another of these great big failures with diversity. How is diversity going to improve the army, having a lot of people there that don't actually have anything that connects them together, apart from the army itself? I mean, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? Blood is thicker than water. If you have an army, you want the army all to be made of the same people. If you have a diverse army, then they're not going to want to fight against their own people, are they? If the army is ever called up to fight against, say, Muslims, for example. The former commander of operations in Afghanistan, Colonel Richard Kemp, CBE, said at the time that the recruitment drive pandering to political correctness would fail, saying, "What is most important is that the army is full of soldiers. It is of secondary importance that they reflect the composition of society." In 2017, the British Army attempted to ban the slogan "Be the Best" because it was considered elitist and non-inclusive, but then Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson halted the move. Why wouldn't you want to be the best? Why on earth would you not want the best people to join? I mean, that is the best admission we actually have, that diversity is not about being the best, it's about being the worst, isn't it? They had to pull this "be the best" in exchange for promoting diversity. The British military has also sought to ban gender-specific jobs like rifleman and allegedly sexist terms like manpower. Manpower, what are they going to call it? Woman power. Men have got a third more body strength than women. And it's just so ridiculous, this. Again, it just shows you political correctness is not correct. It's the opposite of reality. On Monday, media reported that the army is set to form a diversity and inclusion directorate. What the hell has that got to do with fighting? Diversity and inclusion directorate. With new staff set to cost the military budget £500,000, with a £110,000 per year salary for the new director of diversity and inclusion. The directorate will seek to ensure that soldiers and staff's differences are valued and that everyone's needs are considered. So what they're going to be doing is promoting gay pride days and promoting Muhammad's birthday and things like that in the army, and charging a lot of money for this as well, which is really going to stir division, because that's what diversity is. It's division. It's just going to encourage division between the people in the army, isn't it? Colonel Kemp remarked on the report, saying, "The emphasis must remain on inspiring the iron ethos of service before self and creating the cohesion which is vital in combat. Obsessing over differences and individuality is dangerous." That's just it, isn't it? This diversity is all about individuality, and that's what they're saying here. With staff's differences need to be valued. You don't want people to be different in the army. You want them all to be the same. It's about sacrificing yourself for the good of the whole. Finishing off, he says, "Most people join the forces because they want to belong to something greater than the corrosive cult of individualism." And that is basically what they are promoting the army as now, just another diversity quota exercise in massaging people's egos and telling them that they are the best, when in actual fact they're not. And in something like the army, as the same as with the medical industry, when it comes down to it and you don't actually have the best people, then you're going to have catastrophes occurring. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk radio for the nationalist community.